Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. I'm lightly tanned, unrested, unready, but I'm going to make it through on some Oasis endorphins, and it's Monday, so I'm here with Bill Kristol, who can carry me on a post-vacation hangover. How you doing, Bill?
I'm fine. How was your vacation, Tim? How was Oasis?
Oasis was so incredible. It was biblical, as they say. Mad for it. It was really something. You know, they were on a 16-year hiatus. We're in their hometown of Manchester. Very few Yanks there. As soon as I opened
Manchester,
my mouth.
England, not Manchester, New England. Hampshire. Yeah, some of us are very parochial, you know?
I spent a lot of time in Manchester, New Hampshire. Let me tell you, I can tell you about the bar scene there. It's pretty rough. It was my first time in Manchester, England, which has kind of like a British Detroit feel to it. One of those working, you know, industrial towns. It's kind of being revitalized. And we were out in their big, you know, city park, Heaton Park, and 80,000 people. All these limeys knew every word to every song, the B-sides, the everything. They came out and it was, I had British strangers hugging me. It was really quite the experience going to see the Oasis reunion in Manchester. So that was good. Madrid was great. Amsterdam, going from the Spanish to the British with the Dutch in between, I felt like I was whispering the whole time in Amsterdam. Like it's one of the most, a much more modest people in Amsterdam. But it was wonderful. I have to warn the audience, it might be a 2-week vacation next year. I could have done a couple more days, but it was really good. How are things here?
Well, it was tough without you. We held down the fort. Actually, we just seem to have done pretty well. I did the podcast with our friend Cam Kasky there. You're in your absence, and I went pretty well. Has he talked to you yet?
Yes, I was worried about
the fact that you're going to be moved aside a bit, and it's going to be, you know, the grandfather relationship is really a good with the 24-year-old.
One of the original name ideas, one I still kind of like the best, frankly, for FY Pod was Boomer Zoomer, and so you could just move me out and have it officially be Boomer Zoomer.
Yeah, it's your you and he have a lot to talk about, but like Oasis.
I called him like an older brother on the way to the airport, and I was like, I'm not going to have my vacation fucking screwed up. Because you do something crazy. So behave. So I'm glad to hear it worked.
He behaved. And then we had an interesting week in politics, culminating with Epstein this past weekend. And Oasis sounds great. Yeah, I don't know much about Oasis. Like, I don't really...
You don't know Wonderwall?
Hugging strangers at some big event. I don't know. I'm not really big on that. Last time I think I hugged a stranger was in Fenway Park in 1975, when Carlton Fisk hit the walk-off home run in the 12th inning of the sixth game, the greatest moment I've ever seen in baseball. Yeah. And everyone in Fenway Park was hugging each other. So that's my Oasis. You know, my Oasis is the World Series 50 years ago.
Noel walking back out to the hometown, telling them that don't look back in anger is up next, was kind of like the Carlton Fisk, I think, of the moment.
That's great. It was great that you had a good time.
Look at my Instagram if they want to just see me in pure bliss. But now, not as pure bliss, I guess. So we had some good things happened, it seems like. Well, actually, let me ask you, what did I miss the most? I read nothing. Anytime I would receive a text from someone about something, and I would admonish them to not follow up. I didn't want any more information. I was essentially totally black with a few bad apples, like Tommy Vitor texting me. And other than that, I was black. So what did I miss? What was the most important thing you think that happened?
It's a good question. I don't know. There was a lot of news. I have to go back and look at morning shots to see what we all covered. I mean, Epstein took it over beginning around a little bit Sunday with the, which was right after you left, with the release of the Joint Justice Department FBI statement. But then when Trump butted into a question on Tuesday at the cabinet meeting and took the question that was intended for Bondi, really, and said, oh, why does everyone even care about Epstein? It's so ridiculous. He's a dead guy, whatever he said. I mean, that did drive the MAGA base crazy. And then a lot of people, and I'd include myself in this, said, you know what? What is going on here? And is there like a reason why we don't know a little more about what this horrendous, grotesque, horrible sex criminal did over years? And he was a friend of Trump's, and we can talk more about that. Sarah and I did this little podcast on Saturday afternoon, kind of last minute, where Epstein was in the news. We both had opinions about it, which were that it was a legitimate issue, basically. But we neither of us had followed it at all closely. We're not really into conspiracy theories. So we did this 20-minute thing, not on a regular slot or anything like that, obviously, Saturday afternoon. I just looked at it this morning. It seems to have gotten over 500,000 views. Honestly, it was fine, but it wasn't like scintillating, brilliant, hilarious, insightful, nothing sure you could not know otherwise. And then I did this thing with Julie Brown, the really fantastic reporter who broke the story again and forced, in a way, the second indictment of Epstein in 2019, when she wrote these pieces for the Miami Herald in 2018. And that's gotten also a lot of attention. And what that tells me is, these are not MAGA people, I'm going to guess, watching the Bulwark, watching me and Sarah, right? Yeah. Our people, if I can put it this way, are interested in it. It is a very interesting, horrible in many ways, of course, but I mean, interesting story about many things, our criminal justice system, our elites, Trump, New York financiers, unfortunately, sex trafficking. So anyway, I'm now slightly obsessed with Epstein.
Okay, great. I've been there for a while, so I was happy.
Is that right? Oh, good for you.
Yeah, it's nice you had an 8-day catch up. I did a Julie Brown interview. She is great, and I was happy you did the Sunday show. We did it back when I was doing the Next Level Sunday interviews, which feels like a lifetime ago. So it must have been 2 or 3 years ago, and I'll put a link to the show notes. The gist was kind of like a, there's something weird here still, and I was like, I hadn't been paying that close of attention to it, and I was like, I want you to educate me, basically. And so it was long form, kind of went into the origin story. She talked about the victims a lot, and we talked a little bit about the Trump of it at the time. So if people are just catching up and want to kind of get that backstory, Julie K. Brown has been the reporter on this. I'll put the link in the notes here. But the Trump part of it has continued to nag at me for a while, because mostly, I mean, partly because of the troll, but also just because of it is pretty wild. I mean, like the coincidences are pretty extreme, and the death, suicide, if you will, did happen when Trump was president. and so I was more obsessed with like kind of the meta narrative about this. Like, how did this become a right-wing coded conspiracy theory? Like, Trump was friends with the guy. Acosta, who was in his cabinet, gave him the sweetheart deal initially. He died under the Bill Barr Justice Department. There are also some Bill Barr connections to Epstein. Maybe there's nothing here, but if there is something here, it's related to Trump. The comparison I have now to this situation that I'm wondering how you'll react to this is that it's a little reminiscent of the Harriet Myers thing from the beginning of the Bush second term, where and maybe it's just the Laura Ingraham clip I'm about to play you, because I remember Laura Ingraham going very hard against Bush in term two over the Harriet Myers thing. And, essentially the right wing media kind of asserting itself and saying that he'd gone soft. Trump has never experienced that. And he's experiencing this now. We are in day 8 since that memo came out. Here's a little audio mashup I put together from the Turning Point USA festival this weekend. That includes Laura Ingraham and Dave Smith and Charlie Kirk and some others. Let's just take a listen.
I will not rest until we go full Jan 6 committee on the Jeffrey Epstein files and every single client that was associated with this thing has an FBI agent at their door on their phone going after them the same way they went after the Jan 6ers and the peaceful patriots and the praying grandmothers that were on those steps. That's how we should go after every single person that was in the Epstein client list.
How many of you are satisfied? You can clap. Satisfied with the results of the Epstein investigation? Clap. Okay, I told you to clap. You guys aren't listening. I'm not going to grade you on a curve. So I was going to get to that. How many of you are not satisfied with the results of the investigation?
I think the DOJ should immediately move to unseal all the Epstein documents in the Southern District of New York.
Yeah. Everything.
Listen, guys. I'm a free American. I supported Donald Trump in this last election. Yes, he did just actively cover up a giant child rapist ring, and I'm going to criticize him for that, okay?
I mean, the crowd reaction is notable.
It is striking. So, I mean, I think people like me, I want to say for Kevin Ross, probably didn't pay as much attention to this once it became such a part of MAGA world conspiracy theories. How that happened, I agree, given that Trump is the guy who was so friendly with Epstein, there's all the video, Trump praised him in 2002, et cetera. How that happened, maybe it has to do with QAnon and they were so obsessed with the, you know, massive pedophile activity at the highest levels of the U.S. government and Pizzagate and all. And it more, once Epstein reemerges, thanks to Julie Brown, who is not a MAGA type, but thanks to her really courageous reporting and indefatigable reporting against many obstacles, incidentally, and he gets re-indicted, recharged into 2019 and then dies. And then Maxwell's charged in 2021, I think, and convicted. Somehow that was fine, but that was different from the MAGA world obsession with it, which I do think was, don't you think, probably QAnon related and sort
yeah,
of.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that there was a tie between the kind of QAnon element of this and that Trump was one stopping the pedophile rings and the Pizzagate, you know.
Yeah, and then Biden's president and nothing, they indict Epstein, nothing much happens. And that's, and then.
And Maxwell. Maxwell.
I mean, I'm sorry, they indict Maxwell, not Epstein. And Epstein's dead at this point and convict her. But I will say this, just now that I've looked at it and talked to Julie especially, I don't know, if you have a mass, I kind of, whoever was on that audio, if you have a massive conspiracy, two people get charged? I mean, are they the only people who knew what was going on? Are the only people who helped make it happen? There was money sloshing around. There were arrangements being made galore. Now, not every person who, I don't know, flew Epstein's plane necessarily knew what it was for. And maybe you wouldn't go necessarily charge all those people. But there are a heck of a lot of middle level, upper middle management people in this conspiracy, as there are in others, incidentally. You think about Madoff, think about these others. My impression is, I haven't researched this honestly, but more than one person gets charged in these cases. Sometimes they turn state's evidence. Maybe they don't get punished severely, but they're just kind of, you know, didn't quite understand what was happening, maybe. But anyway, a lot of that didn't come out. And the original deal in 2008 was a total disgrace. So the notion that the elites took care of themselves, elites didn't want this rock to turn over this rock too much. They reluctantly went after, I think how reluctant it was, they went after this repulsive creep. They give him a plea deal in 08. By 06, I think they felt they couldn't ignore it. There was so much talk about it. They give him a plea deal in 08. Julie Brown personally gets them to finally indict him again 10 years later. He dies, and then they do Maxwell. They get her convicted, and then it's all just dropped. And I don't know, maybe all these guys didn't know. They didn't know how old the girls were. They didn't realize they were being sex trafficked. They just thought this was kind of a thing that happens in elite circles in New York and Palm Beach. It's minimally unbelievably, well, creepy is not even the word. I mean, just horrible. And hard to believe there weren't charges that could have been brought against those people. Now, maybe they couldn't prove them. It's whatever, prosecutorial judgments. Maybe. So that's one side. So I think what's happened, if you want the Harriet Myers analogy, the right turned on Myers because they thought she was a squish sort of on abortion and other issues. People like me and David Frum criticized Myers a lot, and I think probably made it more legitimate in a sense for some of the more moderate Republican senators to say, we're not going along with this, because we just thought she wasn't up to the position. It wasn't appropriate for as a Supreme Court nominee. And so the equivalent, I'd say, was this is MAGA's going after Trump, which causes trouble in Trump's base, which is good politically. But also, I do think a lot of people, I'll say this about myself, you know, sort of been reawakened to just how much of an outrage the whole thing is. And then the Justice Department, it's Trump's Justice Department, so we should stipulate that. I'll come back to that in a sec. But the Justice Department of the United States puts out a 1.5-page statement with the FBI that just says that nothing to see here. Doesn't explain. I mean, I was thinking about this. Comey and Hillary. Let's go back to emails for a minute. So he decided not to prosecute. But you know what? It was a big story. It was a big concern. And he put out a statement. He had a press conference. Yeah. He explained. People didn't like the explanation. They did like it, whatever. But I mean, it was like they felt some obligation to explain to the public why they were doing a certain set of things in this very controversial and a case that had a lot of attention. Nothing of that here. So even if it weren't the Trump Justice Department, it's kind of bad, I think. And of course, Trump was a very good friend of Epstein. We have a lot of evidence of that. I mean, they both say it, so there's not even, he's in the files. We know that he's in the airplane logs already. We've seen that. He's got to be in the files. I mean, he was close to Epstein. How could they not, how could he have not come up in a bunch of interviews? Should they put out unredacted, vetted files? Well, some person says, I hear Donald did that. No, that's not right. Obviously, in a criminal investigation, there's a million things that shouldn't be shared. But he is the president of the United States. Should there be some account of his involvement or non-involvement? Maybe that would be worth knowing. And finally, while you were gone, there was all this publicity about Bongino. Is that how he pronounces it? And obviously, Attorney General Pam Bondi and Kash Patel. They're fighting. They're unhappy. Bongino's unhappy. Bondi's taking the hit and all this. It's all ludicrous. This is the one thing Sarah and I really both, I think, independently came to as we talked about it Wednesday or Thursday and thought, this is ridiculous. It's Trump. Pam Bondi is not deciding how to handle the Epstein files without consulting Trump. Maybe she's careful and doesn't formally schedule a meeting with him and there's an indirect communication. Trump's kind of good at that kind of stuff. It is inconceivable that Trump didn't sign off on these things, maybe order the decisions that Bondi and Patel came to. And anyway, they believe in the unitary executive, so he's responsible for it. I mean, he is literally responsible for it, right? Just the way, he doesn't get to walk, to say, oh, that's Bondi and Patel. I don't know anything about it. So Trump decided to slam the door shut on the files of this sexual predator whom he was a good friend of and who is probably mentioned in many of these files. That's kind of a big story.
Yeah, and depending on what you, it's a really big story. Depending on what also you mean by files, like there are other Trump accusers. And Julie points this out, right? It's not like there's just one secret black book where he listed all the men that raped women, right? Like the files encompass all the investigations, the videos. They went into Epstein's home and took out a lot of tapes. People don't know what is on the tapes. There are other accusers. It was Stacey Williams, I believe, that accused Trump of groping her in an Epstein-involved situation. There's another woman who did as well, attached to Epstein, the Michael Wolff book. Now, I'm a little kind of iffy on Michael Wolff, but he says that Epstein showed him pictures of women on Trump's lap, topless women. Were they underage? I don't know. So the point is that any legitimate investigation into Epstein would have included running down these types of accusations. And so he would be in there at some level.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info, like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back, with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I want to talk about why I think that this I don't want to, get over excited that this is going to be the thing that breaks MAGA or whatever. But I want to talk a little bit about what the real risks are with MAGA in a second. But since you brought up Bongino, that first. He took a mental health day on Friday. He took the day off. And apparently reported that he has gotten a screaming match with Susie Wiles. CNN over the weekend says that he's told multiple people he's considering resigning over this. Who knows, right? Is that a face-saving thing? Is that Bongino doesn't like having a real job? Is it that Bongino doesn't like it was handled? That he knows something? But again, that brings legitimacy. That is a real news item. The deputy director of the FBI, Trump named him the deputy director of the FBI. He might be a clown, but it would be a pretty major story in any administration if the deputy director of the FBI was I'm going to resign because I think that my boss is covering up a pedophile ring.
Totally. That's very well said. And I just want to emphasize that point. I mean, it's the idea that this is, I was on a various conversations over the weekend. I won't bore you with them. And, you know, various liberal friends in Washington and elites and lawyers and so forth types. And they were like very abashed about even discussing it. I don't know, Bill, is that really a thing? I said I was doing the podcast with Julie Brown, Sarah and I had done one and stuff. And I was just going to write something about it this morning. I thought, there's like, oh, this that kind of, you know, I guess you have to. It's probably hurt some politically, but you know, it's kind of, we got more important things to talk about and all this. The deputy director of the FBI, as you say, Trump's personally handpicked appointee, possibly quitting the administration 5 months in over a cover up that Mangina will say is Pam Bondi's, but must therefore be Donald Trump's.
Right.
That's a very big story, right? It doesn't take away Trump. That's a story in any administration. I couldn't agree more. So it really is absolutely legitimate to cover. And since the Bongino reporting is so broad based now, and in fact, half of it's by people whom Bongino is probably telling it to, right? Laura Loomer. I mean, who's the source for Laura Loomer? What are the, you know, you follow some of these MAGA characters a little more closely than I do. Do we not think that Bongino is personally the source for Laura Loomer? Like a 75% chance of that? I don't know. I mean, so it's not like this is just third hand, disreputable, gossipy stuff. Clearly, as you said, he took that day off. He's very unhappy. So that's a story. I absolutely agree.
Here's like also, I think, the big picture political element of this that relates to that Turning Point USA video and the response of the crowd, relates to kind of the response from the manosphere. We've seen some of this from some of these less political, less guys that got jumped on board the Trump train that did care about the Epstein issue. Like, given what has happened, like they put out this statement that says that there's nothing there. Like, the implication of that is one of two things. Either essentially all of the deep state conspiracies are fake. If there's really nothing to the Epstein case, then there's nothing to any of the cases that they've got, that they have gotten all excited about, that has driven MAGA media for years. Or Trump is covering up pedophilia on behalf of the most influential people in the world, including himself. Like, that's kind of it. Like, if there's nothing here, like, those are the options. Like, you either take it at face value, there's nothing there, and that all of these conspiracies, even spending all this podcast time in over the years, amounts to nothing. Or Trump is involved in a massive cover-up on behalf of the elites. And I think that, like, the first one is important, because when you think about the risk to MAGA, you know, because, you know, I think that probably a lot of liberals would just default to the first one, which is like, it's probably the first one, right? Like, it's probably just that these guys are all a bunch of conspiracy theorists and there's nothing there. But there will be a reckoning for that, if that is true, on the right. Like, if you take what they've been told at face value in MAGA world, like, and you look at the Pam Bondi, Cash Patel record so far, there have been no arrests of the Biden crime family. No arrests over 2020 election fraud. No arrests over the Russia hoax. No arrests involved with Jeffrey Epstein. How could that be acceptable to these people? I don't understand. I don't think it is. And I think that you will see the backlash. And I think that they are almost as vulnerable to delivering nothing as they are to a cover-up. And obviously, covering up Donald Trump being complicit in this would be a bigger story. But I think it's a real political vulnerability.
You know, I think Trump senses that, which is why in that kind of insane long Truth Social post of 5 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon, he turns it in a way which is both crazy, but in a way consistent with what you're saying. This was invented by Obama and Clinton, and I mean, it goes on, right? The document almost seems to say,
I have it in front of me. Let me just read it really quick. What's going on with my boys, and in some cases, gals? They're all going after Pam Bondi, who's doing a fantastic job. We have a perfect administration, the talk of the world, and selfish people are trying to hurt it all over a guy who never dies, Jeffrey Epstein. For years, it's Epstein over and over again. Why are we giving publicity to files written by Obama, Crooked Hillary, Comey, Brennan, and the losers and criminals of the Biden administration who conned the world with Russia, 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 the laptop from hell, and more blah, blah, blah. So, like, that's what he's trying to lump it in with.
Which is literally almost crazy. That is 6 days before his own Justice Department and FBI, in a statement that, as I said, must have been signed off on by him, have said, look, we've gone through all – I hadn't really realized until I read the statement personally. They go into a little bit of detail, not much, but a couple of paragraphs. We've gone through all these files, all these videos, extensive. Many agents and investigators have looked into this. Who knows if they're telling the truth? But they say they went through all this stuff. They say nothing about the files being cooked up or invented by Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, or anything like that. Yeah. And they say, but there was nothing there. There's not enough there. There's no conspiracy. There's nothing to chart. Not even no conspiracy. It would be inappropriate to release any new information. That's what they say. But the files are legit. Suddenly, Trump realizing that he's got the problem that you sort of specified, which is, well, wait a second, if the files are legit, okay, well, let's hear something about them. The files are made up, which is in a way typical Trump, kind of shrewdly just trying to totally change, you know, the topic so he doesn't even have to address it. And he denies everything, right? He denies Stormy Daniels. He denies everything that he's guilty, that he did, basically. He's unashamed about lying, to say the least. But in this case, he's now got himself into sort of weird contradiction. I mean, none of his people believes these files were made up. None of MAGA world thinks the files were made up. It shows a kind of panic, in my view, on that 5:21 p.m. Long Truth Social post that you read some of on Saturday afternoon. That feels to me like a little realization that this is spinning out of control. I don't know when that booing was. At
the same time. It was around the same time.
You know, he's hearing about this. And he's sort of, I'll go to my go-to play. It's all invented by Obama and Hillary as a decoy. But these people have been talking about this for years, and no one said it was invented, including Patel, Bondi, or Trump himself. No one said this problem was invented by Hillary or Obama, right? I mean, that would be consistent if they said other things. You know what I mean? The Russia hoax is the consistent fake news item on the Trump's part, right? It was invented by Mueller and Obama, and now it's been invented 8 years later. But so what's he going to do? I mean, I think what he'll do is, and he says this sort of at the end of that long Truth Social thing, he's going to go after, redouble his efforts to go after everyone he can go after. Forget about Epstein, but I'm indicting, you know, Comey, I'm indicting, God knows, I'm reopening the Hillary investigation, I'm reopening this, he'll come after the Bulwark, I don't know. I mean, he'll desperately try to get his people focused on the malefactors who, you know, he wants them focused on. But that's difficult in this case. This, as you say, 2019 was under Trump. 2000, he didn't complain. You know what I mean? It's Trump wasn't complaining about the settlement in 2008, so far as I know, under the Bush administration. So anyway.
I think that's a sell that works for like the Newsmax watchers. You know, if you're a 70-year-old MAGA person who leaves OAN on all day long, like, sure, like, whatever is going to work on you. Like, eventually Charlie Kirk will get in line, you know, on side, right? Like, Fox primetime eventually gets on side, or like, you can only talk about this for so long, probably. But that nexus of people that were drawn to Trump because he felt like he was a finger, tiny little finger, in the eye of the elites, you know, and that's what they liked about him, that he was anti-establishment, he was different, that he, you know, wasn't going to get us involved in the wars, that he, like you hear that from like the young men that got along with him. I think that the credibility is unrecoverable on this. Like, these guys are wired to believe that there is a conspiracy, whether or not that there is. You know, like, the idea that you can tell them that the Jeffrey Epstein thing was just nothing, actually, is just laughable. I don't think the credibility is recoverable with them, which is meaningful.
It's so evidently more something than all these other, quote, conspiracies. I mean, actually, right. Epstein was not a conspiracy theory, exactly. Right. It was a criminal case. Yeah. He pled guilty in 08. They gave him a very soft punishment. It was reopened, as we've discussed. And they indicted him. Those documents are public. I just looked at it this morning. So it's not a kind of Pizzagate, oh my God, the deep state.
Yeah.
They weren't covering it. They indicted him. Then they indicted and convicted part is, Maxwell.
Yeah, the suicide part is like, I guess, the conspiracy.
That's
to the
fair.
Extent you would
right.
know that. Yeah.
Right.
That he didn't really kill himself. But then again, they released the video. There's like a 1 minute gap. It's like, why is there a 1 minute gap? And then again, on stage, and this is how you end up eating your own young. On stage, it was not one of the clips I played, but at TPUSA, Charlie Kirk, even Kirk is like, can you just tell us who else was on the floor? Right? It's like, you know what I mean? Like, what other prisoners were on the floor? So we can like look to see if any of them might have connections or whatever. I don't, you know, you start putting the pins against the wall with the string. But I mean, I think that like part of it, you know, is, I guess, the quote unquote conspiracy, but also it is odd. It's unusual, you know, raises some eyebrows.
What do you think about the sort of the soft, you know, Trump supporters? I guess they can just, the Wall Street, I'm interested to see what the Wall Street Journal says and stuff. I mean, will they just sort of dismiss it? Harry Enten reported on CNN, I don't know how reliable a thing this is, that an indicator this is, I assume what he said is true. There's a wild surge in Google searches for Trump and Epstein. And I take it that sort of feels to me like us getting 500,000 views, Sarah and me, for this 20-minute video. Yeah. You know, let's say normal people, not necessarily Trump, maybe Trump supporters, but not MAGA world. they're not, you know, are just like, well, what is the story here? What are the facts? And the more people get to a sort of Julie Brown level, obviously not exactly at her level, but a simplified version of a Julie Brown level of understanding, well, what happened over these 20 years and what happened over the 15 years before that when Trump and Epstein were great buddies? And, you know, what is the real story? I think that hurts him in a slightly different way from the way you're describing with MAGA World, but in an additional way. It's sort of like the Myers thing. It hurts him. The base didn't like it because she wasn't fervent enough. And like legal, you know, scholar types sort of thought, I thought he was going to like, I thought the new conservative legal originalism was John Roberts and it was serious people, you know, and it both can hurt, right?
All right. Well, we'll continue to monitor. I feel pretty happy. I'm kind of giddy and vindicated about the whole thing because I was so fucking annoyed the whole time that I was like, how is this a right-wing conspiracy? It's like, if anybody killed this fucking guy, it's Bill Barr and Trump. And I don't know if anybody did, maybe he killed himself, but it's certainly not Hillary Clinton. How was she going to do it from Chappaqua walking through the woods?
I mean, good for you for being on this earlier. And I think it is important. I mean, one point that Julie made, and I want to also just, the victims here do deserve a word of, you know, concern and God knows sympathy and justice, some justice, at least as far as they can get justice for what happened to them, terrible things that were done. It never even occurs to Trump to say that. I was very struck by that, you know, or really to Bondi or Patel. They have one half sentence in that two-page memo that's sort of about doing justice to the victims, but in their actual statements and their tweets, there's nothing about that. And that's somehow to me very, very revealing, you know. And Trump went out of his way to say he wished Maxwell well when she was arrested in 2020. Remember that? And from the White House podium.
Yeah.
But he's never said anything about the victims. What does that say about Trump? Trump thinks about it as, I knew Jeffrey. He was a good friend. Maybe I had a falling out with him, whatever. I'm sort of involved. Other people I know could well be involved. Other Trump donors, other God knows who else, right? I mean, in those circles. And we got to keep the lid on this. And there's not a moment of thought that there were hundreds, maybe 1,000 or something like that, underage girls who were victims of this monster.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, I talked to Julie a lot about the victims during that first convo because it was a little bit outside of like kind of the political frame. We did a little politics. So again, people can go listen to that because her stories are really astonishing and tough to listen to, but important to listen to.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back, with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Where do we want to go next? I have a series of other things that have been happening. I guess I want to start with immigration. While I was gone in MacArthur Park in Los Angeles, so I come back last night and I'm like, all right, I got to start reading about what the fuck happened this past week. And this story, I forget, you know, I'm like going through different newsletters and, you know, going through the old morning shots and all that, and all, you know, reading through what happened. I was reading this one and I clicked on the PBS story. Dozens of federal officers in tactical gear and about 90 members of the California National Guard were deployed for about an hour Monday to a mostly empty park in a Los Angeles neighborhood with a large immigrant population. Mayor Karen Bass, who Bullock subsequently did an interview with about this, what I saw in the park looked like a city under siege, under armed occupation. I was reading that story and I was like, wait, the military is still in Los Angeles? Like, why is the fucking military still in Los Angeles? And this morning, as I was trying to get to catch up, I was like, what? what have they been doing for the last week? It is truly crazy that the federal government is still taking control of the California National Guard and has deployed Marines to Los Angeles to just hassle people.
Right. I think they were supporting the Border Patrol people who, you know, were proudly riding through on horses. It was so third world and so horrible to see. I mean, incidentally, Los Angeles is not on the border. So we have the Border Patrol plus the National Guard in a park in LA where kids literally, it was a Monday, were like there for, you know, their camp. They go to the park to play soccer or something like that. I mean, that's who was there. I mean, it really brought home the kind of semi-fascism of the whole thing, honestly. It brought home, I think, the warnings of some of us that this wasn't going to stop. Once they began this the deportation thing just accelerates, right? And your point is so good about the Guard and the Marines. I think 200 Marines are now being sent to Florida to help out with that horrible camp in the Everglades, or to help, I don't know what, protect ICE people. Not that they're being attacked. They're picking up 70-year-old people, you know? I mean, remember, we all, I will say on this, called attention to this, that original executive order, the original justification was all open-ended. It wasn't only for LA. It wasn't only for California. It was for any troops he needs, wherever there's could be a problem, wherever they had intelligence, there might be protests. I mean, Miller laid the groundwork for this. And they're going ahead with it. Now, there is a pretty big reaction, I would say. You asked what you missed during the week. A few people were like a little, really? This is not where we are? Plus, there's some business reaction, farmers' reaction against all the harassing of hardworking people. And a little more Trump voters saying over and over, this is a JVL obsession, of course, you know, I didn't vote for this, even though they had mass deportation, you know, printed up placards at the Republican convention, but they didn't think they were voting for this, I suppose. So anyway, that's...
Yeah, here's the thing, though. So there's this fascistic and scare... Well, always with fascism, there is like a clownishness involved with it. So like, there's the clownish side of it, too. Clint Klippenstein was reporting on that raid. They gave it a name, Operation Excalibur.
Yeah.
And it was just like a totally botched laughingstock. Like he had some sources of the National Guard. He's like, we were there for like 20 minutes. Nobody knew what they were doing. We all had different code names. You know, it's like the Border Patrol was Pepsi and the Marines were Coke and ICE was A&W root beer. And it was like the whole thing was ridiculous. Like it was just a farce. You know, at some level there's that. But and like these errors like are adding up. Just like I was kind of trying to clean up on a couple of the stories that I talked about. This Narciso Barranco, that was the father of the three U.S. Marines that was violently tackled and beaten up in L.A. He is supposed to be released today. Donna Kashani is the Iranian woman that was gardening here in New Orleans, had been here for 60 years. She got released. I was gone after a couple of weeks. Last night, this guy, George Redis, I don't know if we've talked about him, but he's this disabled U.S. veteran and U.S. citizen that was like violently detained for several days in one of these raids. He got released after about 3 days. There's some other examples of this, but you see like the problem developing, right? Which is that the Congress just gave tens of billions of more dollars to ICE to go out and find and detain people. They're having to hassle, you know, and harass and detain people that are not violent criminals or major risks, like already before all those other resources. So like, I mean, to me, that augurs very ominously for like what is coming down the pike. It seems like the best case scenario is that we just spend billions and billions of dollars to have a bunch of guys sit around with their thumbs up their ass, which might be what's happening right now in LA.
I mean, that would be good, but they are deporting a lot of people. They are way beyond capacity in terms of the current detention capacities, capabilities, and they're building, as in Florida with that Everglades thing, they're going to now spend all this money to build many more detention centers and to spend money to get them out of the country, including now, because the courts have given them a sort of green light on this, to third countries where they have no relationship and don't even speak the language, and the South Sudan thing. So I'm pretty, Tom Homan, the, you know, sort of Miller deputy in effect on this, was like, we're going to preside over the largest mass deportation history. You can bet on it. So I think the clownishness is real. As you said, it is characteristic of a lot of these kinds of movements, political movements, but the fascism is real too, if I can put it this way. And will there be enough of a backlash that at some point Trump says, hey, I mean, this is getting a little out of hand. It is pretty unpopular. There was that one immigration poll that came out while you were gone. Did you see that? Where, you know, numbers have changed pretty radically across the board on immigration, actually, but presumably in reaction to this stuff, particularly in terms of your general views of, are you favorable or well-disposed to immigrants or not? And it's like shot way up. And do you think we have too many of them, too little? Too little has gone up, too many has gone way down. So I don't know. Does political reality hit at some point, or is this the one thing they're going to do and they don't care? And Homan and Miller are going to just, our friend Aaron Reich Melnick, we've both done podcasts with, said months ago, they're going to have trouble hiring all these people because here's how the procedure works. And, you know, there's all kinds of qualifications and vetting. But I mean, he did at the time said, of course, these procedures are kind of at their discretion. I mean, I think Homan and Miller, they will hire every tough guy, thuggish guy, proud boy, you know, someone who got fired from a sheriff's department for beating up, you know, someone whose skin color he didn't like. I hope not, but I very much worry that they'll be ICE agents 6 weeks from now. And so I'm slightly on the side of being super alarmed about where this goes, not reassured that they kind of are going to screw it up so badly.
And Garrett Graff, who I might try to get on in the next couple of weeks, wrote about this. He was covering this the last round. And he covered essentially the story of like the CBP officers. Like there was a big hiring spree back then when they're pretending to build the wall or whatever on border agents. And, you know, one of the things he came away from it is it's like, it's messy. It's not like the FBI. There's not like that kind of vetting system. You know, they made some really bad mistakes. Like they hired people that had criminal records and, you know, they hired people that weren't prepared for this. And that was small compared to what they're trying to do now. Just one more thing on the Everglades. Because it's in America, not in El Salvador, some Democratic members of Congress have been able to get in there. And, you know, I was watching Debbie Wasserman Schultz's press conference talking about how the conditions are very poor. And Maxwell Frost was echoing that. The Miami Herald got, you know, the files of who is in the Everglades Detention Center. Hundreds of immigrants with no criminal charges are being held there. You know, maybe about a third of them have no criminal charges, or 260 with pending criminal charges, 240 with criminal convictions. So it's like, are there bad people that are being caught? Yes, great. But like, does the manner in which they're doing this mean that like we are holding people who have done essentially nothing in cages and making them like lay next to violent criminals and shower next to them and eat, you know, like, yeah, like that, like both are happening.
And I mean, I don't know enough about the law about exactly what, I mean, obviously at the border, it's a different situation than internally, but you can't arrest people and just hold them indefinitely in the United States of America. At least I didn't think you could, and you can't normally, and the New York City Police Department can't, and they can hold you 48 hours and you call your lawyer. And if they don't have charges with witnesses and the whole apparatus of a legal system, you leave, and you can also get bail. I mean, none of this here, right? They just hold them. And I guess at some point they're going to ship them out based on their own determination. I mean, there's some provision for some legal help sometimes, it seems like, but they've taken laws that really were designed for the border, right? Someone sneaks across, he's half a mile across. We're not going to have a whole U.S. style apparatus before we send that guy back to Mexico, right? I mean, so that would be crazy and impractical. Yeah. But they're taking those kinds of rules and applying it to people who are gardeners in Florida or in California. It's really terrible. I mean, in that respect, the corruption it's doing to the country. I mean, I feel bad for the people, obviously, who are being detained above all. But the general corruption to the notion of the rule of law and all that is quite great as well.
Michael Tomsky pointed this out. I think potentially there's some political opportunity here for Democrats because, the poll numbers have changed in immigration, but they're, you know, maintains, you know, I think wrong-headed concern among some Democrats about like whether this is a good issue and maybe they should stay away from immigration as much. But he framed it in a way that I think is interesting that might allow some Democrats to get into this issue on a more, you know, comfortable and favorable turf. In 2023, the federal government spent $12.8 billion to build new affordable housing for people. And the bill that passed a week and a half ago now has $45 billion on detention centers. So like when you think about like the most fundamental issue that people have concerns about, like housing costs, cost of living in this country. Like, the government is prioritizing by about 4x, you know, putting immigrants in detention centers, what they are prioritizing on providing housing for people. Like, that kind of stuff, I think, really can resonate and get you into kind of the more economic side of this stuff.
Especially when there's so many stories about the people who are in these centers, as you say, have no criminal record or trivial, you know, one driving offense kind of record, and literally are working, you know, are being hired on their way to jobs or having checked in as they are supposed to do legally to update their status each month or, you know, whatever, right? It's one thing if you told people you've got to spend $40 billion because there's so many violent criminals in this country, it's the only way to keep us safe, they'd say, okay, you know, it's expensive to have, you know, law and order. But that's not the case here. So I think the combination is probably pretty effective.
Even in that situation, it's like, do you want to live in a country where you're spending four times as much on prisons as you are on housing for people? Yeah, like, and all of a sudden, I'm about to start sounding like a democratic socialist over here. But I do think that there are, economic populist way to get into this.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info, like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back, with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
The floods in Texas, also horrible. I've got more to come on this with some guests coming later in the week and maybe next week over kind of what's happening with FEMA and what's, you know, happening with the cuts to the National Weather Service and what is ahead. But just kind of a brief word, like, A, just the tragedy. And again, like, the resource allocation questions. Like, we've got, you know, a soldier standing outside the federal building in Los Angeles guarding nothing. And, you know, meanwhile, there are people dying in Kerr County and Texas because of these floods. You would think that maybe there'd be a better way to allocate resources. But it seems to me just to be a pretty real failure, particularly of the Texas local government, which is kind of the point in these sort of situations. But I don't know if there was anything that struck you about Texas.
No, I agree. And it does seem like it was true that FEMA was slow getting there because Kristi Noem had insisted that she sign off personally on every $100,000 expenditure or something. And in fact, when FEMA really goes to a place, you know, they spend a fair amount of money getting people there. Obviously, they got to buy plane tickets. And so I don't know. Yeah, there's been a lot of contradictory reporting, and correctly, people are more focused on the horrible tragedy for now. But it seems like neither the federal government nor the Texas government, state government, have distinguished themselves in this, unfortunately.
Yeah, more to come on this. I want to talk with you about trade stuff. So, you know, Trump now, after tacoing and untacoing a million times, it's now August 1st is the big day on the reciprocal tariffs for Europe. There's really a big kind of New York Times take out of this about how the EU is still negotiating and drawing up, you know, any retaliation that they're going to do. But really more are just, you know, trying to reorient the trade map and the plans and figure out how they can kind of move forward without having to deal with, you know, the mad king in America when it comes to economic deals. And so you have that on the EU side of things. And then we have decided to have a tantrum and put a 50% tariff on Brazil because Trump doesn't like the treatment of Bolsonaro. I've got a pretty hilarious clip of Kevin Hassett trying to defend that I want to play in here in a second. But do you have any big picture thoughts on the latest on the trade side of things before I do?
I mean, it's pretty bad, and somehow the markets have held up and the economy's mostly held up. But you do wonder, I don't know, people I trust who are sensible economists and not even, fantastically anti-Trump necessarily, just think the risk is getting greater and greater. And I guess if you think ahead politically, if you can't combine some of what we've seen on Epstein and some of what we've seen on immigration with some real faltering in the economy, the housing starts also down a lot. Some of this is immigration related, incidentally. I don't know. I feel like, they could be heading for a rough time here politically because of that.
Yeah, the economic thing is hard to kind of figure, right?
Because
there are a lot of mixed signals. The market has been resilient. The U.S. economy is big and dynamic and complex, and right, and it's like, you have these huge pockets of areas where you're seeing negative signs. New people coming out of college, new hiring is tough right now. Certain industries, right, but not like right after the Liberation Day, where there were signs maybe there was going to be a widespread economic downturn.
I mean, trade is something like, 12% of the U.S. GDP? I mean, these things, they're slightly overhyped in a way, how it would just destroy everything overnight. We can cut trade a lot with some of these countries, and it's not going to matter much. On the other hand, it does add up. Supply chain, I what do I know? But I feel like people I think who are sensible are much more bearish for 3, 6, 9 months from now. We're such a big economy. We had pretty good momentum coming out of the Biden years, if I'm allowed to say that. We're not to get into the crazy. We should forget about Biden. Coming out of the previous administration, that Trump was able to coast on that for a while. But I got to think all this is doing real damage.
Your old friend Kevin Hassett, I do just have to play a little bit from. He's on TV. For folks who don't know Hassett, he was, I guess, economist in good standing, maybe a little hackish during the Bush years, but fully went in with MAGA and, the more, whatever you want to call this, protectionist economic plan. He was on with John Carl, and John Carl was just trying to get him to explain what is the legal basis and what is the rationale for a 50% tariff on Brazil, a country that we have a trade surplus with and no national security concerns related to. And I'd like to play for you the exchange.
On what authority does the president have to impose tariffs on a country because he doesn't like what that country's judicial system is handling a specific case?
Well,
how is that?
If he thinks it's a national defense emergency or if he thinks it's a national security threat, that he has the authority under AIPA.
So how is it a national security threat that, how Brazil is handling a criminal case against its former president?
Well, that's not the only thing. That's not the only thing.
So what is it? I mean, I've asked what it is. I mean, it seems that that's what President Trump's talking about. He's talking about his anger and his frustration. He's been quite candid about it with the Bolsonaro case.
Right. Well, the bottom line is that what we're doing absolutely collectively across every country is we're onshoring production in the U.S. to reduce the national emergency that is that we have a massive trade deficit that's putting it at risk should we need production in the U.S. because of a national security crisis. And this is part of an overall strategy to do that.
But again, as we've just established, we have a trade surplus with Brazil, not a deficit. And we've had a surplus with Brazil for 18 years.
How do you live with yourself? I mean, that is humiliating.
Yeah, no, it is. Well, he's a hack, and I guess, it's nice to see the hacks have to be even more self-evidently hackish than sometimes in defending these things. But it is, and how Congress, I mean, not to get back to one of our favorite themes, but I'll just say it for 30 seconds. Congress has authority over tariffs and trade. Congress could stop this tomorrow. They could stop the Brazil tariff. They could actually pass a law saying you can't use AIPA, which is misusing anyway, if we have an actual surplus with the country that you're using it to justify, using a trade deficit to justify these extraordinary measures. But of course, it all should be illegal. Maybe we'll see if a court does. One court did find some of it illegal, but Congress is the one who could snatch back authority. I mean, do the Republicans on the Hill, the combination of these things, does it ever, ever, ever lead them to break a little bit? I mean, with Myers, which I was slightly involved in, to get back to you, I hadn't really thought of that analogy.
Yeah.
It was the Republicans. It wasn't me and David Frum or Laura Ingraham. It was the Republican senators, finally, I think Cornyn maybe and others like that, who had some stature on judicial matters, saying, ugh, no, we can't do this. We shouldn't do this. I don't know. Does anyone ever do that in the era of Trump? I don't know.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info, like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back, with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Maybe only on this final issue, Ukraine. I mean, a lot of damage, a lot of death, a lot of unnecessary death in Kyiv and other places throughout the country because, you know, Russia has continued to bombard them while they pretend to do peace deals, while we don't provide them even defensive weapons. But there's, you know, credible seeming reporting today that there might be an announcement that the U.S. is going to be providing new weapons either to Ukraine or selling them to Europe and having them given to Ukraine. We'll see exactly how that like works out. What do you make of that? And I've got some thoughts, but what do you think?
I mean, it's good. It's too little too late. And so I hope it's not too little, but it's too late and it's better than nothing. And yeah, as you say, Ukraine's the one issue where the Republicans, even last year, were willing to thwart, you know, go against Trump. And I think there's some genuine belief there, really. You know, they care and they think it's a disaster not to help Ukraine. So I hope they go ahead with it. And maybe this reversal of Trump, well, I don't know, politically, if it helps Trump or hurts Trump, or people don't really care. But
I think it's interesting because, look, we've got, I don't know, how many 1,000 days left with this guy, at least
3.5 years,
whatever that makes up. It's 11, you know, 1,200 days, something. It is important to just be like real and like clear eyed about like what we're dealing with. And I think that sometimes in the anti-Trump world, like people dip a little bit into kind of fantastical like thinking about it. And like this isn't like the Russia thing is a prime example, right? Because there have been two theories of the case always. Like one is like what I will call the Krasnov theory, that Trump is a Russian stooge and that Trump is doing whatever Russia wants and that we are going to slowly reorient ourselves to be in alliance with Russia. And you know, who the hell knows what else, what other implications come with that. And the other that I've always preferred frame is that Trump, like, is a man child that like think that like wants, you know, that his dad didn't hug him enough, and that he wants to be respected, and he thinks that Putin is his friend, and he thinks that the other people were mean to him over Putin, and that Putin was really nice to him, and that finally, far, far, far too late, he's starting to be like, wait a minute, maybe Putin's not nice to me, actually. And like, maybe this is wrong, you know? And Zelensky comes to meet him 2 weeks ago, puts on a suit, and God love Zelensky for doing this sort of shit. Having to suck up to Trump, I couldn't fucking do it. So puts on a suit, you know, butters him up, and we'll see. Maybe that works, you play it out. But like, I combine that with like, I was watching his interview with Lara Trump on Fox, which is real North Korea type shit over there. They have a future Senate candidate, maybe daughter-in-law, interviewing her father-in-law about how great he is. And she was asking him about his legacy. An interesting question to ask with 3.5 years left in the term. The first thing he says is like, I want people to think I'm a good person. you don't want to overread any random sentence that comes out of Trump's mouth. But for me, it was just one more data point towards like, I don't know, man. This might be like a sad, pathetic person that like wants to be respected and liked and wants to be on Mount Rushmore and wants people to butter him up and treat him seriously. And in that like view, it is rational to do that, to do all the stupid shit that I refuse to do, but that these other guys have to do in order to kind of get him to come around and like say, okay, fine, we can give some patriots to Ukraine. And if that happens, I just think that will be an important data point to assess and to like think about how to, you know, kind of process and deal with this fucking lunatic for the remaining time we have.
I mean, I think the foreign leaders have really learned this and have internalized it. And I, it's sort of like you, I don't blame them, especially not someone like Zelensky, whose, you know, nation is on the brink. But you know, the head of NATO did that ridiculous suck up text that Trump made. They're defending real, and they have real reasons, you know, their responsibilities to their citizens to do this. I don't begrudge them this. That's very different from people at home strengthening him for the next 3.5 years, which is sort of the Republican Congress thing. But yeah, no, it's interesting that you're right. He's less, maybe a little less ideologically committed to destroying everything good in the world. He's still like ridiculous, you know. I mean, the weakness is itself a huge problem, obviously. It's not like Putin couldn't suck up to him for a week or something like that. And and he does prefer dictators. That's the final point I'd make. I mean, the Bolsonaro Putin stuff, he just, that's what he admires, you know. So it's not good, but it may not be quite as bad.
No, it is not good. I don't want to
I think but it's not quite as bad as some of our friends may sometimes have thought.
Yeah, I just, you know, I keep assessing, you know, I'm always like, I go back to that conversation I had with Chris Hayes on election night where he was, where we were like, he's like, the band of outcomes is the widest possible. Like, it was literally like Trump could just golf and do nothing for 4 years and let the status quo go on and be happy he's not in jail, or we could have nuclear winter, right? Like, the band of outcomes was so wide. And I just, if the Ukraine weapons thing does go through, you know, it'll just adjust me back one tick towards away from the worst possible outcome. That's all.
Right. And my little modification might be, I think the bad outcomes could be a little better than one might have feared in foreign policy for certain reasons that are unique to foreign policy. If you want to be a success, you do have these other nations. I do think at home, on the other hand, don't you think in the first 6 months, we've been on pretty close to the red zone in the band of outcomes. Yeah. I mean, deportations and politicization of justice and the whole just destruction of, you know, our scientific research. I mean, it's that stuff has been really bad.
Yeah, not great. Close to the red zone. But I don't know. Okay. Well, we need a meter. I need to like create a meter, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking, that's right. I said the red zone thing. I was thinking of like one of those, you know, I don't know what I was thinking of exactly, but there are those meters, right?
Yeah, what do we do during the DHS? Now, I know you want to get rid of DHS now, but in the original days of Tom Ridge, we had the threat assessment, you know, the orange and the yellow. Right. And we can, we'll have to go back to look at that. All right. Thanks to Bill Kristol. He'll be back next Monday. You and me, well, we need each other, so we're going to be back here tomorrow with another edition of the Bulwark Podcast. I'll see y'all then, and every single day this week. Don't worry about it. No holidays, no vacations. Bye. Peace. We'll be right back. The Bulwark Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.